Well, I want to welcome everyone to today's Internet Seminar on Technology Transfer and Training Resources for Mining Sites, which is being sponsored by U.S. EPA's Superfund program. My name is Michelle Mahoney, and I work with EPA's Superfund program. I'm going to moderate today's session, and I will also be presenting some information to you. I'm going to get started in a few moments, but while we wait for others to log on, I'm going to cover a few housekeeping items. When you registered for today's webinar, you were directed to the seminar's specific URL, which is the front page of today's seminar. This front page of the webcast contains a short abstract of today's session. We also have some bio sketches of the presenters, and you'll also note that the presenters' email addresses are hot links on that page in case you should have any questions for one of them after today's presentation. For those of you joining via the phone lines, we do ask that you put your phone on mute for the seminar. We will have time for questions and answers, at which point you will be welcome to take your phone off mute and ask your question. If you don't have a mute button on your phone, we ask that you take a moment right now to hit *6, and this will place your phone on mute. When we do get to the question and answer period, you can hit #6 to unmute the phone. And this greatly reduces any background noises that can disrupt the quality of our audio transmission. Also, I want to ask that you don't put us on hold. Many organizations have hold music or advertisements that can be very disruptive to the call. Again, keep us on mute and do not put us on hold. So by now, all of you should have clicked on the agenda for today's go-to session icon, and you should be on slide number one of the presentation. This is the main page, which contains the slides, above which you'll find navigation icons. If you move to slide two, this is where you can see what all of the little orange buttons at the top of your slides can do for you. You can submit questions by using the question mark icon that you see above the slide. You don't need to wait to use this question mark icon until the question and answer session. In fact, we encourage you to submit in advance your questions in advance of the Q&A session. Also, if you experience any technical difficulties with the audio stream, you can also use the question mark icon to alert us to the technical difficulty you're having. But please include a telephone number where you can be reached, and we will try to help you troubleshoot your problem. The presenter will announce the number of the slide during their presentation. You can advance to the next slide using the single right arrow located above the slide or by clicking on the appropriate slide number in the left-hand frame. As I stated earlier, we will have a few question sessions, and we typically place these seminars in an archive with the soundtrack, so in the near future you will be able to access the slides and hear the presentation as it was given today. Associated with the links page is an online feedback form. We ask that you consider filling out the online feedback form since we do look at your comments as we continue to try and improve the content and delivery mechanisms of our webinars. You can also request a confirmation email from the feedback page as a record of your participation in today's event. Lastly, this event will be recorded and archived on the Cluelin website, so within 1 to 2 weeks, you will be able to download it in several formats or replay it online. You can subscribe to our Cluelin podcast to review new archived seminars as they become available, and that website you can find that is cluelin.org/live. So I think we're ready to kick off today's session. Before we get started, I just want to remind the phone participants to put your phones on mute, and if you don't have a mute button on your phone, hit *6 now. And again, please do not put us on hold. So with that, we can move to slide number three. So today's seminar is the first in a new webinar series being launched by my division of Superfund, which is the Technology Innovation and Field Services Division, TIFSD. The purpose of this new series we're launching today is to provide our audience of site managers, regulatory agencies, consultants, the general public, and other interested parties. We want to be able to provide you with relevant and current information on abandoned mine land issues and available treatment technologies. Today's seminar is to provide background on some of the resources available to regulatory agencies and other organizations that conduct extensive work or research and provide support for the characterization, cleanup, and restoration and revitalization of abandoned mining sites. So if we move to slide number 4, today we're going to cover 5 topics. We're going to begin with an overview of the resources available through the U.S. EPA. EPA regulates mining activities in the United States in 3 general categories, hard rock mining, non-metals mining, and coal mining. However, what we'll discuss here is the different support options available for cleanup and restoration of mine lands through EPA, included but not limited to technology transfer, such as the work in my division, and also direct work with other federal agencies, states, tribes, communities, and mine operators. And then also through the Office of Research and Development. And then we're going to hear about training and technical resources for mining waste available through ITRC, the Interstate Technology and Regulatory Council. And this is a cooperative organization consisting of 50 states, the District of Columbia, multiple federal partners, industry participants, and other stakeholders. And then finally, we're going to hear about the technical resources such as the Global Acid Rock Drainage Guide, available through the International Network for Acid Prevention, or INAP. This is an industry group created to help meet the challenge of acid mine drainage. And then we're going to conclude our seminar with an opportunity to ask questions that weren't answered during our speaker's presentations. We'll also briefly touch on the next webinar that EPA Superfund is going to host in September. And we appreciate your feedback on our proposed topic and would like to learn if there's something else you would be interested in hearing about in this topic area. So now we're on slide number 5. I'm going to begin, Michelle Mahoney again, I'm going to begin with a presentation on characterization, cleanup, and revitalization of abandoned mining sites, which is a new focus area on the CLUIN.org website. This new focus area of CLUIN was launched in January of this year, and our purpose was to be a one-stop shop for information on the resources available to assist with characterization, cleanup, and revitalization of abandoned mining sites. And you can see the web link here, cluin.org/mining, is where you can access this page. We basically give a general overview of the various U.S. agencies involved in characterization, cleanup, and revitalization of mine sites, and provide links to respective pages on these mining issues. And the next few slides, I'm going to just show you a little bit of a flavor for what's on this website. So if we move to slide 6, our website provides background information on the most common types of mines found in the United States, and links to specific case studies where cleanup and revitalization has been conducted, and the use of innovative or notable technologies or techniques that have been used at sites. Move to slide 7. So we have an area of one of the pages that's the characterization page. And this provides the user with links to 2 U.S. EPA documents that are a source of information and ideas for project managers who are involved in characterization and cleanup of inactive mining sites. There's the EPA Abandoned Mine Site Characterization and Cleanup Handbook, which is a compendium of information gained over many years of experience on mine fleet site cleanup projects, and provides information on dealing with issues important to site investigation, cleanup, and long-term management. The second document that we link to on this page is an appendix to an EPA Hard Rock Mining Handbook, and this document presents methods that can be used to determine the physical and chemical characteristics of waste materials, describes environmental tests used to assess contaminant mobility, outlines the conceptual models used to analyze contaminant fate and transport, and discusses the elements of quality assurance and quality control. And, you know, this website is being populated with additional resources, you know, as we become aware of them, as they're created, and as the site evolves. So it's definitely not static. So we move to slide 8. Another section of the CLUIN mining sites focus area deals with cleanup technologies. So there's a range of traditional and innovative technologies that may be appropriate for cleanup of mining sites. The page directs you to where you can find this information for selecting cleanup technologies, such as the ICRC Mining Waste Treatment Technology Selection, which Sherry will talk about a little bit, where you can receive assistance, such as through EPA's Office of Research and Development, which you're going to hear a little bit more about from Doug, and that's the Engineering Technical Support Center. This page also focuses on currently available treatment technologies, which are organized by the type of media the technology is generally used to address. The information on the treatment technologies on this page was adapted from ICRC's Mining Waste Treatment Technology Selection website, and you'll also find links to all of this information here. So on slide 9, you'll see a bunch of websites. And these are also all located on our website. The revitalization and reuse page provides links to a variety of EPA resources, where you'll find reports, fact sheets, technical resources related to the revitalization of mine lands. These resources describe tools for reuse of former mining sites and various land revitalization techniques and projects, such as the use of soil amendments for revitalization and also the Repowering America Lands initiative that encourages the development of renewable energy on current and formerly contaminated land and mine sites. We move to slide 10. We have an events page on our website, and it's regularly updated. It can contain a list of upcoming internet seminars, such as the webinar that you're on today, upcoming professional meetings, largely focusing in North America, and all of these events are related to mining sites, as well as providing links to archived internet seminars. So like after today's webinar, you'll be able to get a link to the one that you're on once it's available. Moving to slide 11. There's also an additional resources page that is, it's a complement to the characterization, cleanup technology, and revitalization and reuse sections. And this can be found on the resources and links page. These include links to pages maintained by other agencies, organizations, and academic institutions. And then we have a presentations page in the mining site focus area where we post presentations from past meetings. We currently have several presentations posted from a meeting that occurred in EPA Region 8, their Rare Earth Elements Workshop that was held last month. So if you're interested in that, you can find those presentations. And we do anticipate this section to grow as, you know, we become aware and learn about new and other workshops and events where people would like to post their presentations. Moving to slide 12, I also wanted to direct you to another web page on CLUIN that's called EcoTools. This is maintained by my division, and this is a page that focuses on tools for ecological land reuse. Basically, this focus area offers information, resources, and technical assistance related to the ecological reuse and revitalization of contaminated lands. Some of the resources you'll find on this page are lists of principles proven critical to the success of revitalization and reuse projects, a discussion of soil-related issues, such as the use of soil amendments, introduction to the use of native plants and vegetation, and then also a new area for us, which is information on the urban gardening and agriculture on potentially contaminated properties. You'll also find lots of case studies on this site on ecological revitalization, links to other resources, which are organized by our EPA regional offices. And we also have sources of information and can provide you with assistance through this webpage for ecological land reuse. This site is not specifically just geared towards mine lands. However, I do think that a lot of the principles, information, and resources on this page can be useful to those wanting to bring an abandoned mine site to a productive reuse, such as an ecological reuse. If we move to slide 13, I wanted to let everyone know about a research area that my division is leading It's an effort to evaluate mine-influenced water treatment technologies and to develop materials to support selection of appropriate and cost-effective treatment technologies. Basically, you know, mine-influenced water at mine sites comes from mine drainage, processed water, and stormwater, and needs to be characterized to determine any regulatory constraints and potential source control, treatment, metals recovery, and other management options. And essentially, EPA wants to evaluate mine-influenced water treatment technologies, both existing and innovative, and looking at their treatment effectiveness and limitations, their cost to implement, the applicability of the treatments. And what we're doing is we intend for these materials or this compilation of information to further inform decision makers about the diverse technologies available for mine-influenced water treatment, as well as better understand the importance of weighing the upfront installation costs with the long-term operation and maintenance of various technologies. And this work, I'm going to talk about the EPA's national mining team in a couple minutes, but this work is all being coordinated with that team. And the results of this research will be compiled and made available to decision makers as well as the public, and the information could be disseminated, you know, on this website that I've been talking about, and I'm sure we'll have a webinar once we have the information all together. So that was the end of my presentation, and now I'm going to just present a few things on behalf of Shahid Mahmood, who's also with the US EPA Superfund program. He's the one of the co-leads of the National Mining Team, and he is the lead of the Abandoned Mines Team here at EPA. And unfortunately, he wasn't able to join us, but he's given me some slides, and I'm going to talk through some of the things that Shahid is working on now. So now we're on slide 15. Basically, the goal of EPA's Abandoned Mine Lands program is to identify ways to protect human health and the environment by using all the non-regulatory and regulatory approaches available to the agency. The Abandoned Mine Lands program is coordinated through the agency's National Mining Team and the Abandoned Mine Lands Team. So the National Mining Team, which we, I'm going to abbreviate as the NMT, consists of EPA staff from headquarters, regional offices. We have representatives from Superfund, RCRA, FIFRO, NEPA, Clean Water Act, et cetera. And essentially, the National Mining Team concentrates on technical, policy, technology, and process issues for active mining sites. The National Mining Team's Abandoned Mine Lands Team was created as a subgroup to the EPA's National Mining Team, and their purpose is to address issues related to abandoning mine sites. And Shahid informed me that the Abandoned Mine Lands Team has been inactive for some time, but he plans on reforming this group soon to focus on this issue related to Superfund characterization and cleanup of abandoned mine lands. So together, these two teams provide expertise on issues at abandoned mining sites and serve as a focal point to coordinate and facilitate issues with stakeholders. If you move to the next slide, which is slide 16, this is a snapshot of the Abandoned Mine Lands webpage on EPA.gov. And on this site, you'll find site information, policy and guidance, technical resources, revitalization and reuse tools, mining processing sector details, related links, information on abandoned mine lands where you live, and state and tribal management of abandoned mine lands. Moving to slide 17, here you'll see a list of topics that EPA wants to learn more about. We want to know about identifying innovative cleanup technologies, what we can take, what technologies might have some field scale opportunities. We're also interested in learning about recycling and reusing mining waste in a beneficial way. The agency currently has under review guidance on beneficial reuse of mining waste, such as reusing copper slag for roadbeds. We're interested in the actual reuse and revitalization of mining sites. For example, exploring options for development of renewable energy on current and formerly contaminated lands and mining sites. And some examples of sites where we have tested this, and or implemented this is the Summitville Mine, which is a micro hydroelectric project that offsets the power needs to the pump and treat of the acid mine drainage of that site. And then there's also the Molycorp site in New Mexico, which is the former tailings area that now has a 20-acre solar field. And the last thing on this list is the reprocessing of mining waste. We're interested in learning about the economic viability of doing this, the opportunities to reprocess mine tailings and waste rock, and EPA is considering some guidance on this issue. So moving to slide 18. So the old conventional approach to mine site cleanup is capping and lime neutralization. And one of EPA's goals is to study innovative treatment technologies for mine site cleanup. So some of the things we're interested in, like for water treatment, we want to learn more about bioreactors or sulfide-reducing bacteria. For extraction and source control, like what technologies besides capping will neutralize acid-generating rocks. We recently learned about a foam technology at the Hard Rock Mining Conference. So we're just interested in learning about these things and what has, you know, potential for field scale pilot studies or implementation. Moving to slide 19. So the reuse of mining waste, currently under agency review, is a CERCLA guidance on the beneficial reuse of mining waste. We're interested in the chat rule concept. The chat rule involves the use of chat for roadbed material. And we're interested in this concept that takes similar approaches for other materials such as copper slag. EPA is developing guidance to look at chemical properties, physical properties, and the economic analysis and risk associated with the reuse of mining waste. One thing that I do want to note is this is a guidance that EPA will be providing and not actually conducting these analyses, but we are coming up with the guidance on how to do these things. And essentially, our end goal would be to have reuse of the mining waste be part of the mine site remedy, in which copper slag is the first material that EPA is assessing. And then as far as renewable energy development at contaminated lands and mining sites, there's basically a lot of promise for this since, you know, these mine sites have a lot of acreage. EPA is working with the Department of Energy to pilot study 8 to 10 sites to test the feasibility of siting renewable energy on these types of sites. Some of the sites that are being looked at are the Chino mine in New Mexico, the Gil Edge mine in South Dakota, the Leviathan mine in California. And what our office does in Superfund is we partner with EPA's Repower America to determine tools needed to assist with this type of reuse of mine sites. So, for example, there was recently a development of the liability Q&As. So Repower America, I think their link was on a previous slide, but you can find that at them on the EPA.gov website. So moving to the next slide, slide 21. For reprocessing of mining waste, this is kind of a new area of study for EPA. This is our interest with reprocessing mining waste. We don't want to be confused with re-mining or creating bigger holes. We're basically looking for ways to reprocess the mining waste that's, sitting in piles. We're interested in looking at what are the economics of doing this. Metals are very valuable, but how do we do this in an environmentally protective way and also in an economically sustainable way? One example of a site that we're aware of is the East Helena Smelter, which has sold some of their tailings for zinc extraction. So we're just interested in learning more about how we can do this at other sites. And again, all of the work that I presented here is being coordinated in effort as part of EPA's national mining team and with our remedial project managers. So with that wraps up my presentation of the tools available here through EPA's Superfund program. I think I see a couple questions coming in, but I think I'm going to hold off on those for a second, because Sherry Bassinger, who's going to be presenting, is calling in at a very specific time. So I think with that, Doug, I'm going to move to you and your presentation, if you're ready to go.
Yes, I am.
Okay, great. I'll give you a little introduction. For those of you who don't know Doug Brodsky, he currently works in EPA's National Risk Management Laboratory, which is in Cincinnati, Ohio. He's been an environmental engineer in EPA for the last 33 years. And with that, Doug, I'm really excited for your presentation, and it's all you.
Great. Thank you so much, Michelle, and I'm delighted to be here today, and I appreciate being invited to this first OSREDI CLUIN oriented mining webinar. And I guess I would like to say, well, first of all, I am with ORD, and I'm with the Land Remediation Pollution Control Division. And can everybody hear me okay? Okay.
Yeah, and, you sound good.
And then, and I'm in the, I work in the Engineering Tech Support Center. And I've started working my second term, my second go-around in 2009. Moving on to some of the objectives here, I'd like to say that there are a couple of slides that I borrowed from my opening presentation at our early April Hard Rock Mining Conference that we had in Denver, Colorado this year. I borrowed a few slides from that presentation, and most of the rest of the slides have been contributed by David Reisman, who I'm going to have to acknowledge from the standpoint that Dave's going to be retiring soon, actually by the end of the month. And next week he's going to, one of his last charges and duties is to be visiting a mine site down in Arizona next week with our new acting Tech Support Center Director. Dave had served in that capacity for about 14 years. Our new acting director is Dr. John McKernan, who's come out of the ETV program to serve 120-day detail here, and is picking up the reins and guiding the Tech Support Center and the work that they do. And the objectives of my presentation today, I'm going to attempt to present essentially an overview of some of our past and current mining remediation research and technical support activities, and also to give you a listing of current projects and activities that not only does the Engineering Tech Support Center staff work on, but also the broader divisional staff in the Land Remediation Pollution Control Division. So I'm going to move on now to slide 24, and just to sort of couch things a little bit so far as a broad perspective, we're looking at essentially several broad concepts here to determine how can we best extract and utilize resources, including byproducts, more efficiently. These are questions that we're trying to answer to help improve our technical support, technical assistance activities. Secondly, how can we manage waste more efficiently? In the past, where we've had removal and disposal activities tend to be very costly, and also other active approaches. We're looking to more passive technologies and doing more at the site in situ treatment of these impacted areas. We're also looking at how can we most efficiently and best reclaim and restore lands used for mining traditionally, and also how can we produce socioeconomical advantages, including profitability, closure, and liability related to these sites. And so finally, we're looking to advance solutions for what we consider to be a new legacy through best practices with maximum economical effects while yet still incorporating an life cycle approach to the way we go about improving the environment. So with that, this is a slide that I've extracted from the Hard Rock Mining Conference this year. Essentially, we're looking at over, and different people have different numbers. You can see that there are numerous sites, especially in the western United States, but that's not to preclude, or I should say exclude, sites, mining sites that we've been active in working on in Maine, state of New York, Kansas, Nebraska, and some of the middle of the United States. And so mining waste is generated by active and inactive mining production facilities, and its impact, as you know, and as Michelle very succinctly stated, its impact on human health and the environment is a growing problem for all of us, government, industry, and the general public. Moving on, slide 27. A lot of this work is done through collaborations. All of ORD's mining programs, which I'll go into briefly in a couple of minutes, involve multiple partnerships with other government agency programs, regional offices, along with industry, and also we work with academia and the Western Governors Association and other consortiums like that. And it's critical to our success to collaborate with these groups. Slide 28. Normal Engineering Tech Support Center has been one of several ORD mining programs that has appreciated a lot of success over the years. Formerly, there was the Mine Waste Technology Program back in the 1990s with Roger Wilmuth. And Diana Bless took over in the early 2000s. Initially, beginning in the 1990s, it had DOE oversight, ORD technical direction, MSC out of Butte, Montana, had the demonstration oversight, Montana Tech, with the basic research. The Engineering Tech Support Center came along in the later 90s, 1990s, and David Reisman was very responsible for spearheading this mining aspect of the Engineering Tech Support Center. In fact, to date, almost half of our projects deal with mining sites. And in an era of shrinking funding, treatment technologies must be cost-effective. And as you'll see in this listing, these are some of the areas that we've done research in, certainly the innovative biochemical reactors with chemical reactors in conjunction with chemical reactors as far as lime addition to increase pH, to neutralizing acid mine drainage, mine influenced waters as we now refer to it as. And we've done quite a bit of work with sulfur reducing bacteria and so forth, along with electrolytic processes, sequestration, and capping. Certainly constructed wetlands, such as the Peerless Jenny Mine in Montana. It was a fairly prominent application of constructed wetlands there, which I'll show you a couple of pictures of. So mine water treatment options, picking up where Michelle was talking about mine-influenced water technologies and treatment technology research. We've been extensively involved with that. We've seen, it's been shown, where active treatment's been expensive, labor-intensive, requires power. Power is a tricky consideration, especially with abandoned mine lands and remote locations. We're looking more toward utilizing passive treatment with lower costs, reduced maintenance, and we use gravity more than pumping systems. And in some instances where warranted, we'll use a combination of both active and passive or hybrid systems. to deal with these sites. So just to give you a little bit of a perspective so far as where we've come from, again, Dave Reisman was able to contribute to the next series of slides. In the late 80s and early 90s, we did work on what they call the Big Five in Colorado in the Burley Tunnel. These were done under grants with Roger Olson of CDM Smith, Ed Bates, who's retired a couple of years ago, was very instrumental in the Engineering Tech Support Center work. And the Big Five in the Burley Tunnels, I guess what's significant there is this is the first time that passive treatment, as I just referred to, was used and demonstrated. Also, we've taken a look at lime alkaline channel applications, aerobic lagoons. A lot of work was done at Summitville, dealing with a large quantity of materials. Looked at the Aquafix technology, which is essentially another variety, another form of lime alkaline treatment. Moving on here for the next slide, we're on slide 31 right now. Biochemical reactors has developed over the last decade or so, and it's something we've been very active in. And these photos are of the Luttrell repository in Montana. The first BCR was built by EPA in 2002 as a pilot at 10 Mile Creek, and it is still running today. Leachate is treated at the Luttrell repository through passive biological treatment systems and also with bicarbonate to raise the pH. That, by definition, is what the BCRs consist of. As far as Colorado mines, we've done a lot of work in Colorado. I just mentioned the Burley Tunnel. There's also the North Fork Clear Creek, there's a pilot facility up there. In fact, in 1998, the first Hard Rock Mining Conference, we did a field trip up that way near Black Hawk. Old mining area converted into to a vacation retreat for gambling casinos. I mentioned the Aquafix. That's a picture of the Aquafix lime process, channeling lime process. And I guess what's significant about here, and then looking at the Standard Mine, Crested Butte, and these various locations in Colorado, it was important for us to look at different altitudes to see how elevation affected performance. And it's been shown that it really doesn't have all that big of a factor as so far as our ability to treat these sites. Here's another example of a demonstration project. That's Cement Creek rotating cylinder treatment system. It's a low-power aerobic treatment system that's mobile. This was a fairly prominent demonstration project, another example of the kind of work, kind of innovations that the Tech Support Center has brought forth and has been looking at. Moving on to slide 34 here, I don't want to take up too much time here, but I have a list, and this information will actually be available to you at your leisure in the future if you want to look at some of our completed projects over the last decade and a half. You can read down the list, some of which I've already have mentioned, we've done a lot of different testing for substrates, looking at substrates on biochemical reactors, a lot of different scaled testing in the field. We've developed a year-round sustainability treatment system, renewable energy, gravity-fed systems. Again, moving on to slide 35, a continuation of this list of completed projects. We're looking at, conducted workshops dealing with real mine draining issues, and we've also been looking at larger scale systems to impact larger sites and to benefit larger mining sites. As an example, here is some photos of the Peerless Jenny constructed wetlands. I guess what's interesting about this is that I mentioned to you, I had a slide in here dealing with the mine waste technology program that I'm not sure what happened to it, but this is something that initially was started in the mine waste technology program back in the late 90s. They actually used a spray applied cover of urethane grout. The manufacturing name for the product is Cobethane 4990 by General Polymers Incorporated was used to reduce the infiltration of precipitation through this waste pile at the site in Rimini, Montana. But the Engineering Tech Support Center got involved and built a biochemical reactor and employed long-term monitoring. It showed that the water quality of seep flowing from the toe of the surface waste pile was improved considerably, and dissolved metal concentrations for zinc, cadmium, and copper were below the national drinking water maximum contaminant standards. And we did over a three-year period of time. I'm not showing you a lot of the specific data, but you can see here with this chart from what the influent from the added coming from the effluent coming off of the biochemical reactor, some of the improvements, especially with zinc and the cadmium and the iron, at least the first couple of years, and we've got it down to I think a contaminant level that was reasonable and tolerable. Slide 38. We are still very busy. And here's some of our current Tech Support Center mining projects. We do a lot of work, as you can see, in regions 8, 9, and 10, not surprisingly. But I did mention before when I showed you the map and the number of sites around that we are working at several mining sites in Region 1. And also in Region 4, Copper Hill and Barite Mine, and also in Region 6, Molycorp and Homestake. This is slide 39, and Michelle did mention the rare earth elements. It's been a very hot topic as of late. There was a workshop that was in Region 8 conducted several weeks ago, as Michelle mentioned. Gwen Campbell's been very instrumental and involved with Region 8 and their work and the rare earth elements, Rob Weber. But I think that what's significant here, what I'm trying to show in this slide, is the fact that the Tech Support Center has sponsored the production of a rare earth elements document. And it's a review of production, processing, recycling, and associated environmental issues. And that's going through clearance right now and hopefully will be available in the near future. And can be, and we envision that this can be used for training purposes. Now, so far as my personal involvement with hard rock mining, it goes back to 1998, primarily funded through the Mine Waste Technology Program. We started out with a series of workshops, including pit lakes. We did two pit lakes conferences in Reno, Nevada. We just convened our fourth hard rock mining conference in Denver. The last one before that, the third one we did was in Tucson, Arizona. And And we usually try to do field trips. The one in Arizona in 2006, we actually had a field trip out to the Sierra at the copper mine. Phelps Dodge at the time was the owner, and we did an afternoon field trip out there to actually take a look at very extensive operations that they that were ongoing there. They had quite a few lagoons and treatment lagoons and other operations. And that pretty much, I'm out of time. And I'm also out of slides. But I do want to again acknowledge David Reisman John McCready, who's been very instrumental in the past in producing CD-ROMs. We have a series of CD-ROMs on our a couple of our national hard rock mining conferences, the Pit Lakes, and some other specialty conferences we've done over the years, including impacts to mining hard rock mining impacts to Native American lands. We did that in Reno, Nevada. Very interesting conference. We had participation on the planning group from five different tribes. The problem with the CDs is that with the EPA CTS system, you can't access the CD on our computers here. You have to go outside of EPA or maybe, you know, even government as a whole in order to get into the CDs for the proceedings. I'm not going to really talk any more about the websites, what's different from what Michelle showed, and those are very interesting sites, probably a little bit more up-to-date and current, but there's also, understand that this has been recently reactivated again, the Mine Waste Technology Program website. There's a lot of very relevant information associated with some of the demonstration project work being done there. And then our normal EPA web page. We're still trying to work through some snags with trying to get the Hard Rock Mining Conference posted on a web page. But we're going to get some resolution to that. It's at the top of my to-do list. So with that, I'm going to turn things back over to Michelle. And again, I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk with you all today.
Great. Thanks, Doug. I appreciate your presentation. There were a couple comments and questions that came in while you were speaking, but I do want to check in with our next speaker, Sherry Basinger, to see if she's on the line. I know you're under a time constraint, so I wanted to check in with you.
I'm here, Michelle.
Oh, great, Sherry. Do you need to be back somewhere at a certain time, or should we get going on your presentation next, or...?
I have to be somewhere else at 2 o'clock my time.
So. Okay, we're going to let you speak next then.
Okay.
So that you don't feel rushed or anything. And Doug, you're going to hang on the call?
Yeah, I had it on mute. Yeah, oh yeah, most definitely.
Okay,
I'm going to hang on.
Great.
And I'll be more than happy
okay,
to entertain any questions or comments
great.
That any of our audience has for me.
That's perfect. Great. So we'll come back to you. So, Sherry, I just want to give you a little introduction here so our audience knows who you are.
Okay.
Sherry Basinger is the administrator for the Section of Epidemiology for Public Health Practices with the Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services in Jefferson City, Missouri. She's worked for the state of Missouri since 1991, and Sherry divides her time between the Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services and the Department of Natural Resources. And Sherry has spent most of her career working on mining sites, so we're very excited to have her present her information with us today. So, Sherry, it's all you.
Thanks very much, Michelle. As Michelle said, I'm Sherry Basinger. I'm with Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services, but today I'll be speaking for the Interstate Technology and Regulatory Council. We have a team within ITRC. ITRC is the Interstate Technology and Regulatory Council, which looked at issues related to mining waste, and what we did is we put together a guidance document on selecting treatment technologies for mine waste sites. I'm the co-team leader of the group, and my I guess, compatriot in guidance writing is Paul Eager. During the time that we were working on this guidance, Paul was with Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. He has since retired and moved to the other side and works for Golder Associates. So what I'll do today in the next, whatever, 15, 17 minutes, is talk a little bit about ITRC, what ITRC is, and then I'll talk about our guidance document. So I'm on slide 43. I am moving to slide number 44. And just in general, what is the Interstate Technology and Regulatory Council? We're a state-led national coalition. Our members come from state agencies, federal agencies, industry representatives, and public stakeholders. We started in 1995, and basically we started because there were some common environmental problems that existed across the country. We had some agencies that were working on trying to remediate those issues and trying to use some, some innovative technologies, because the conventional technologies for dealing with those problems is too expensive, took too long, all the normal stuff. But in trying to, they would find a site, they would find a state that was interested in using an innovative technology. They'd go through the whole process of saying, here's our technology, this is what we want to do, let's do the testing, let's do the ramping up, let's get the approvals, da-da-da-da-da, we'd implement it. And then they'd go on to the next site and say, here's our great technology, let's try to implement this. And the state would go, whoa, 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 whoa. So ITRC basically got together to try and smooth the way for using some of these innovative technologies at a variety of sites across the state, or across the nation, sorry. Moving on to slide number 45, ITRC's, our goals are to achieve better environmental protection through the use of innovative technologies. Next, to reduce technical and regulatory barriers to the use of new environmental technologies. And finally, basically to build confidence about using new technologies. So pretty much what we'd like to do is move from your basic ostrich with the head in the sand kind of method of looking at new ways of doing things into a much more enlightened mode. Now if we go on to slide number 46, what does ITRC do? Basically, we put out guidance documents. Sort of our gold standard guidance document is what we call a tech reg, or a technical and regulatory guidance document. That's where we take one technology or one environmental issue, examine it in depth, put out a guidance document, which is then reviewed by all the member states of ITRC. It's reviewed by all the participating agencies as well as industry. So it's pretty much a gold standard guidance document. We also do technology overviews, which are shorter versions. They're shorter documents, which look at maybe an update on a particular technology or just covering one technology in specific. We put out case studies where some of these technologies have been used. ITRC is a great place to meet other people who are working with similar types of sites and problems that you are. So it's a great place for peer exchange, and we also do a lot of training. So we move on to slide number 47. I just kind of clipped the training schedule for basically the rest of June, July, and a little bit of August to show you. We do quite a bit of internet-based training through ClueIn on all of our guidance documents. You can see that we cover a variety of topics. We have everything from green and sustainable remediation to integrated DNAPL strategy. And, of course, the most important one will be on August 14th, the mine waste treatment technology guidance, where we'll do a two-hour, basically, how do you use the guidance document that the mine waste team put together. ITRC also does some limited amount of classroom training. We've done one in the past on vapor intrusion. We've also got one on, our current new one is on light non-aqueous phase liquids, science management, and technology. And you can find information on all of ITRC's classes at the website, www.itrc.web, or itrcweb.org. The information is on your screen, or you can email, or you can call. So moving on to slide number 48, I'll talk a little bit about the mine waste team. We had a pretty diverse team. We had about equal percentages of participants from state government, federal government, as well as industry. We had some international participation in our team. We had some members of the public that participated, as well as some academic stakeholders. So in 2007, our team started. We put out a white paper on mining issues. In 2010, we finished the guidance document that I'll be talking about for pretty much the rest of this presentation. And then in 2011, we started a new team, which is looking at one particular technology, and I'll mention that again at the end of the presentation. Moving on to slide number 49. I'm sure you guys are all you know, you're all well aware that mining is important. We need the metals, we need the minerals, we need the fuels that are mined to support our current lifestyle. As a matter of fact, if you drive around in southern Missouri at any given time, you are highly likely to see the bumper sticker that says, if it can't be grown, it's got to be mined. On the other hand, mining is a pretty messy business. Over 90% of the material that's brought up to the surface is waste. You're creating large volumes of waste material on the surface where it's available for exposure by human or environmental receptors. You're also potentially contributing to water quality issues. By and large, there has been a lack of reclamation restoration in a lot of these sites. And you're all very familiar with the fact that mining sites tend to be large. They can be hundreds of acres in size or they can be hundreds of square miles in size. And as you can see from the three photos on the slide, just about any environmental media can be affected by mine waste. Photo number one shows, although you can't really see that there's soil contamination, what you can see is there's some pretty patchy vegetation. So you can have soil or vegetation that are affected by exposure to mine waste. Photo number two is just some typical red acid mine drainage. And photo number three shows some fine tailings blowing off one of the six large tailings piles in Missouri's old lead belt. Now moving on to slide number 50. When we first started working on our guidance, we took our group and we said, how are we going to attack this? We want to put together a guidance document that helps a user select potentially appropriate treatment technologies, but do we want to do it for mining influenced water or do we want to do it for solid mining waste? We went back and forth and basically what happened was we couldn't decide. So we decided we're going to do the whole shoot match. So by solid mining waste, what we're talking about is things like chat or fine tailings or slimes or slags or mine pits, workings, waste rock stockpiles, any of that kind of stuff, all of which have residual metals or minerals, and all of which are, you know, throughout the country, we have hundreds and hundreds of square miles that have been covered by this material. If that material happens to be in a residential area, which we have quite a bit of here in Missouri, you tend to have human exposure. If it's out in the boonies, you tend to have environmental or ecological receptors that are exposed to that material. We also have mining-influenced water, where you have low pH water that moves across some of these formations or the waste materials, and because of the low pH, you're picking up the metals, and you're moving them from one place to another, possibly putting them in groundwater where people could be exposed to them, possibly and surface water where that creates a whole host of other issues. So, moving on to slide number 51, the objectives of our guidance basically are to help a user select from among all the technologies that are available out there to address a mine waste site. We would like to help a user very quickly come down to a series of 3 to 8 that are potentially useful in their particular site. We want to provide information to the user on those technologies. And ultimately, we want to get some of these sites cleaned up. So the pictures on this slide are the Flambeau Mine in Wisconsin, both during mining and after remediation. The site operated for about 4 years between 1993 and 1997. And during that time, it produced 181,000 tons of copper, 334,000 ounces of gold, and 3.3 million ounces of silver. Moving on to slide number 52, what all do we have in our guidance? This guidance is a web-based only guidance, so you're not going to get a paper copy of it anywhere. It would be way, way, way too many pages for anyone to print out. But the web address is up at the top. If you want to open that up while I'm talking about it, that'd be great, but I would suggest that you open it up in a second browser window so that you don't mess up your clue-in thing here. In the site, we have an overview, which is just a general overview of issues related to mining waste. We have a set of decision trees where the user goes through, answers some questions, and ultimately will be given a set of technologies that may be applicable in their site. We have technology overviews that describe those technologies, case studies that support the technology overviews, and then we have sections on regulatory issues, stakeholder concerns, and we provide additional resources. So moving on to slide number 53. These are screenshots of some of our decision trees. This is pretty much the meat and potatoes of this particular guidance document. So, like I said, it's just a series of questions you answer, and it's going to drop you out into a box of technologies. There are several navigation aids that we have throughout the decision trees, things like labels. each page is labeled because the decision tree is much bigger than is going to show on any one, you know, web screen. So each part of the decision tree is labeled, you know, immediate decision tree, mining influence, water, part one, part two, whatever. We use color. Sort of anytime you're in blue boxes, it's generally mining influence water. Anytime you're in green boxes, you're generally talking about solid mining waste. And then we also, up at the top corner of each page of the decision tree, we have a schematic of the entire decision tree. It's what we call the You Are Here box, and it has the part of the decision tree that you're in highlighted. And those are all live links. You can click back and forth through that if you want to or need to. But as you'll see, on these trees, you answer a series of questions, then at the bottom you come out into a box that's either solid green or solid blue with white text. Those are what we call the bucket of technologies. That's where you end up with. There's a series of technologies listed in there. Each one of those technology titles is a link back to the technology overview. So you click on that, that'll take you to the technology overview and you can read about it. There are some places where you're directed from one part of the decision tree to another. Those are all linked, so you just click on the link and it takes you to the right place. Now we do assume that a site is going to be fairly well characterized when a user goes through. But once the site's characterized, they can go through the decision tree, answer a few questions, and then you're going to end up with a list of technologies that might be appropriate for your particular situation. Moving to slide number 54, the technology overviews. We have 22 in the guidance document. These are technology overviews. They are not how-to manuals at all. We have links to other things like the GARD guide and some more how-to type documents. We have links to those on our website. But these are basically an overview. So what we have is an introduction that talks about what the technology is, where it might be applicable, some advantages, limitations, a little bit about performance, cost, and stakeholder issues that you might come across. But these are either newer, we either have technology overviews for newer technologies or for new uses of conventional technologies. And each one of the technology overviews is then supported by case studies. At the end of the technology overview, there's a link that's going to take you to the case studies that support that technology overview. Moving to slide number 55, we have a total of 59 case studies that we've used in putting this guidance document together. As you can see from the map, they're pretty well dispersed across the United States and a couple in Canada. Each one of the case studies provides some just background information about the site, where it is, what type of mining it was, all that kind of stuff. Who do you contact for more information? What remedial actions were taken at the site? What technologies were used? Did they work or not? Approximately how much did it cost? There's not really good, you know, it's not going to say per ton of stuff remediated, it's going to cost you this. But it just, in general, sort of gives some cost information where we can. It also talks about regulatory challenges that were faced at the site, stakeholder challenges, and we also provide some lessons learned and give references. Moving on to slide number 56, there are some other sections in the guidance. We have a section on regulatory issues. It talks about things like water quality standards, where you may not be able to meet water quality standards, areas where you may find some flexibility in water quality standards. We also talk about things like land applying solid mining waste or reuse or reprocessing, reducing bioavailability versus remediating, that sort of stuff. We talk about stakeholder concerns where you get into situations like, you know, you're not going to take away my pile of chat because that's my landmark versus we're going to remove that hazardous waste from your backyard. And then we also, like I said, our technology overviews are not how-to guides, but we do have links to other documents that are in our additional resources section. Then, once we got this guidance document out of the way, we took a look at all the technologies that we had examined in our first treatment selection guidance document, and the one that generated probably the most discussion was biochemical reactors. So in 2011, we started a new team to look at biochemical reactors specifically. And these are engineered treatment systems that use an organic substrate to drive microbial and chemical reactions to reduce concentrations of metals, acidity, and sulfate in mining influence water. It took us 2 days to come up with that definition. That's why I had to say that. The team started, like I said, in 2001. We are pretty much on schedule to have a guidance document out either in late 2013, early 2014. And it also will be a web-based guidance document. So, on slide number 58, this is just contact information for myself and for Paul. If you have any questions, please feel free to contact us. And, you know, please take a look at our guidance document. I appreciate your time and your attention. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Sherry. I guess I want to encourage people to keep submitting questions using the question mark icon online. But maybe at this point, what we'll do is we'll open up for anyone on the phone who wants to ask any questions. Maybe we'll take some questions for Sherry first, since she might have to leave us. Does anyone on the phone have any questions?
I'm not finding that my question button works. That would be my first question.
Oh, okay. I can't really help you with that. I mean, I'm not sure what your technical problem is, but I guess at this point we're just taking questions on the content of the webinar. Did you have a question for the presenter?
I do. I guess I'm wondering if anybody has ever used kind of a layer to separate waste from non-waste that is kind of neutralizing material. I've got a backfilling of an open pit. We're going to have a drain layer on the bottom to capture formation water. So I was wondering if anybody has ever explored using kind of a separating layer so that the waste above it, if water passes through that, will be neutralized before it hits the bottom.
Yes, there have been some efforts. This is Carol Russell from EPA and Region 8, but I'm not sure what the long-term effectiveness is, because most neutralization would come from limestone, which tends to armor with oxyhydroxides.
I see. And then water doesn't pass through it, in other words.
This is Charlie Story in West Virginia. That technique is used on surface mines since the mid-80s. And if the alkaline material is on top, the armor, it doesn't armor because it's moving through the alkaline material before it hits the acid-producing material. Okay? So basically you're not getting armor because the limestone is not being, the alkaline material is not being coated, being coated.
I think I get that.
Because that's been, actually, there have been EPA reports, and this has been done, since the 80s.
Mm-hmm. And that's in surface water drains?
Surface and in backfill material. We segregate and keep it either high or dry or keep it under a reducing environment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Is there any other questions from anyone on the phone? Okay. I'm looking, and I haven't seen any questions come online for Sherry. We still have a couple from mine and Doug's presentation, but I think in order to get our presentations all in, I think maybe I'll hold these questions till the end. And Sherry, certainly if you have to leave, I understand. I think you said you might be able to stay on till the end, but I understand if you have to get back to your meeting, and I really appreciate your taking the time to speak with us today. So with that, we're now on slide 59, and this is our last presentation today. We have Carol Cox, who you heard speak up during that Q&A session there. She's an environmental scientist for EPA in Region 8, and she has special responsibilities regarding groundwater and resources extraction. She provides technical expertise to various EPA programs and international entities regarding resource extraction. So I'm very happy to have Carol as part of this webinar. And Carol, if you're ready, we're looking forward to your presentation.
Thank you so much, Michelle, for the introduction. It's Carol Russell, Carol Cox Russell. And actually, I'm just presenting this. This is really developed by a lot of other people, some amazing professionals. In particular, I want to thank Terry Chatwin and Keith Ferguson as co-authors of the slides and presentation today. So moving on to the next slide, number 60. So in summary, what is this presentation going to provide? Just links to other locations where you may be able to get information. And specifically what the International Network on Acid Prevention, INAP, has, and what you can find in the guide, the Global Guide for Acid Rock Drainage, the GARD Guide. Next slide, 61. So this is a consortium on an international level called the Global Alliance, composed of different types of organizations worldwide. Here in the United States, we have the Acid Drainage Technology Initiative. In Canada, MEND has put together some amazing research documents, so I recommend people go check theirs out as well. The South American Association, South African, Australian, again, since it's in English, it makes it a little bit easier to look at the Australian work, Indonesia and China, as well as PADRE out of Europe. Slide 62. So what are the ARD issues recognized by INAP? Let me step back a little bit and let me tell you a story about a president of a mining company who said, the best way to deal with those abandoned mines is not to create them anymore. So I would say that the other presentations were what to do about abandoned mines. This is how to prevent them. So there's a website there for INAP, based out of Australia. Again, it's a consortium of mining companies that exists to fill the need for an international body which mobilizes acid drainage information and experience. These are some of the largest companies in the world that are actually endorsing that the ideas of prevention of acid mine drainage. And as part of that came the term mining-influenced water, because it isn't just acid that we're looking at, it's production of metals and other constituents that may affect the environment. These are a few of those international companies. I'm from EPA, and this isn't an endorsement. This is a presentation of the information that they've made available, but I really want to commend them for standing up and moving forward on something that's so important to all of us, because we need metals, but we don't need the problems that they might produce. So let me go into a little more detail on the one here in the United States, the Acid Drainage Technology Initiative. They're putting together handbooks. Here's a copy of one of them, Mitigation. To a lot of people, this is Reclamation or Restoration. And one that should be coming out soon that I know you're going to jump on is the Sampling and Monitoring Guide. The Acid Drainage Technology Initiative metal mining sector is composed, and this is a little small to read, but the point of this is that this is a screen capture from their book, from their website, which shows the variety of people that are participating, from industry to academic groups to agencies, state organizations, consultants. And if any one of you want to participate, just give one of these members a call or send them an email. This is the MEND website. Again, on each one of the slides where I did a screen capture, I tried to put in red where you can actually find them. On this page, too, is information in the right-hand side, that says the 9th I-CARD, that's the International Convention on Acid Rock Drainage that just took place, and I hear it was absolutely wonderful. It was in Canada. This is the Abandoned Minelands Portal that was described earlier that EPA has. And this is another portion of that EPA website. But let's get into the Global Acid Rock Drainage Guide.
Okay, Carol, this is Michelle. I just want to confirm, you're on slide 69 now?
69, sorry, folks.
Okay, that's okay. Okay. I just wanted to confirm.
Okay. Just looking at this picture, it just shows us how long-lasting some of the impacts are from mining. This mine was actually put in Roman times, and it's still discharging acid mine drainage. So what these international organizations want to do is to present a guide that will become a reference document for all stakeholders on how to improve acid mine drainage. And in different guidance documents, there are references to this guide, and it's now available in Spanish and hopefully soon in French. So this is the website for INAP. And I'm on slide 71 now about the GARD guide characteristics. It was meant to be flexible, and it was founded on using a risk-based approach. It's meant to prevent the production of acid mine drainage, and it's not a regulatory tool or a design manual. It's more of the questions you need to ask and the processes you need to go through in determining what technologies to use. And it's all web-based and is updated on a regular basis, so it isn't static. So let me go through some of the structure and authors of the GARD guide. First, the ARD processes. Rens Verwerk was one of the original authors here. On putting together corporate regulatory and community framework, this was done out of South Africa, out of Johannesburg. The fourth chapter or section is defining the problem or characterization. This is really important, and Devin and Cheryl were co-authors on that. Prediction, Kirk Nordstrom from USGS and Renz, again, developed this section, and it's becoming more and more important as we move forward. Number six, prevention and mitigation. Ward Wilson and Ben Wickland. On to slide number 73. The GARD guide structure and authors. Ooh, I guess we can't use some of the great things that PowerPoint can do for us now. You can't see some of the other sections that are available. But it goes through treatment, remediation, and resource assessment. Next page. How do you get value from this GARD guide? This is slide 74. Present it rather than treating it. Minimize and characterize disturbed material. And part of this is to characterize within the mine site and special handle only once, rather than having to rehandle material, which is always expensive. Plan and design for closure from the start. This is now a mantra internationally. Integrate the GARD guide into your operations. It shouldn't just be an add-on. It should be an integral part of how mine is developed. And update your closure costs regularly. But notice that the last line here is in a little bit bolder and larger. Engage all stakeholders in the process with shared responsibility. I didn't make that bigger. That was the mining companies that suggested that. So in conclusion, ARD, or mining-influenced water management, is critical to the success of the mine and the reputation of the mining sector. Measurement and ongoing improvement throughout the life of mine is very important. Also, successful implementation of your management plan by engaging all the stakeholders in the process will make it a better decision overall. Moving on to slide number 76. That concludes my section, and on to our next webinar.
Great. Thanks, Carol. So I'm going to take some time for some questions, but before I do that, there's three slides left. And like Carol mentioned, on slide 76, We provide information on the next webinar in this series of mining, the mining topic, and it's scheduled for September 12th at 1 o'clock Eastern Time. And what we're thinking of for the theme of the next webinar is to talk about mine-influenced water issues and remediation techniques. And then the third bullet here is just some ideas we have on some potential presentations for that webinar. But like I mentioned at the beginning, we do want your feedback. Are these topics interesting to you? And if you go to slide 77, you will see the link to our feedback form where you can give us your feedback on today's webinar and any ideas that you may have for future webinars. And then finally, on slide 78, the last one, just giving you a couple links here to let you know other ways you can stay connected with Quillen information on Facebook, Twitter, and I guess LinkedIn is the last one in that list. So with that, I'm going to address some of these comments, and we'll start with a couple of these comments that have been coming in online. And then we can open the phone lines again if anyone wants to speak up with a question. So there were a number of questions and comments that came in when Doug was speaking, although I think this question might be able to be answered by a few of the presenters. So I'm just going to read this question, and I don't know if Carol or Doug or Sherry wants to each provide some information. The questioner from Elk Grove, California, wants to know if EPA has the information it needs on the toxicity of rare earth elements.
If you have more information, we'd really like to see it. No, the information available on toxicity is very limited at this point in time.
Okay. That's good. So I guess the person who sent that question, and if you have some information that you'd like to share, please get in touch with either myself or Carol or any of the other presenters, and we can see how maybe we can use that information. Let's see what else we got in here. One comment was an informational comment that came in from someone from the Office of Surface Mines in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and they just wanted us to know that relative to development of treatment options and costs for treating mine-influenced waters, that the Office of Surface Mining has developed a computer application that is called AMD Treat, and this application estimates abatement costs for such pollutional mine drainages, includes various additional modules, and is presently used by a number of state regulatory authorities. And the website for this is amdtreat.osmre.gov. And I this is very interesting, and I am going to look into it, and I hope that we can put a link to this tool on our Quillen mining page so people will be able to access that tool. So thank you for that comment.
Michelle, this is Sherry. And with the ITRC biochemical reactor guidance, we've also cited the AMD treat, have a link to that. And just another way to get that information out.
Yeah, exactly. The more places you can find things, the better. Thank you for mentioning that.
A question. When was that updated?
Are you asking about the AMD treat?
Yes.
I don't know that anyone on the phone can answer that question. If the person who submitted the question could let us know when that tool was updated, whether you want to, if you're on the phone, you could speak up, but if you're streaming online and want to submit your answer online, I certainly can read that aloud, or you can get in touch with us afterwards. But
I can answer it if you'd like. The The computer program's updated pretty regularly. I know that they're in a beta testing for adding a freak module into it, which should be posted after. I think they have a few changes to make to it. But what's on the website now should be the most recent.
Okay. Great. Thanks. Okay. We got a question that's come in from Denver, Colorado, the questioner states that they are hearing reluctance to treatment options for abandoned mine lands due to the requirement to treat to standards. Has there been any movement on the Good Samaritan rule to reduce the risk?
This is Carol Russell, and keep your eyes and ears tuned.
So something's coming? Is that what you're saying, Carol?
I certainly hope so.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure, not certain at this particular point in time about that resource.
Okay. Here's a question from Charleston, West Virginia, asking which of the global alliance groups have you found to have the most helpful information when researching potential solutions for acid mine drainage? That might be a question for you, Carol.
I'm sorry, I don't have the question here.
Would you like me to read it again?
Yes, would you please?
Sure. The questioner wants to know which of the global alliance groups have you found to have the most helpful information when researching potential solutions for acid mine drainage?
I would say that I would go to MEND for their research documents, and they're available on web, on CD, and in printed form, and they have them over the last, 15 years. So there's a lot of very specific information. So that's one of the places I would go. And don't give up on the ITRC website. They've got some really good information on there, and then places to go to from there.
Okay, great.
Hello, this is Terrence Chapman from INAP.
Hi, Terrence.
And in addition, the Water Research Commission in South Africa and the Sustainable Mining Institute, Knowledge Transfer in Australia, both have some excellent. It really depends on the climate that you're involved in, whether it's very dry or humid, and consequently, you would go to those particular areas. Certainly, Canada has some excellent work pertaining to water covers and things of that nature. So I agree with Carol that there are some excellent documents at the MEND website, but also there are some excellent documents worldwide. And what we've tried to do in the GARD guide is link those and to make the GARD guide sort of a library of resources available on acid drainage and metal leaching worldwide.
Okay. Great. Thanks for jumping in there. Let's see. This question came in during Doug's presentation, and specifically, I guess, something that you had on slide 31. The questioner wants to know if you have experienced public resistance when introducing non-native bacteria in biotreatment systems. I don't know if Doug, if you want to address that, or even if one of the other presenters has some information on that.
Michelle, what's the question again?
They want to know if you experienced public resistance when introducing non-native bacteria in biotreatment systems.
Since I haven't really been hands-on over the duration of the program, it's hard for me to really say. I think David Reisman can probably address that. Well, I mean, you're always going to get some public resistance. We even had a couple of protesters at our recent Hard Rock Mining Conference, as you recall.
Right.
So there's always going to be public resistance. I mean, I'm not sure. That's kind of vague, and
so Sherry or Carol, do you know of any instances where maybe there is public resistance to this this concept of using non-native bacterial and biotreatment systems. Have you had any experience with that?
Not to my knowledge, but I don't have that much experience with designer bugs.
Okay. This is Sherry, and I haven't heard of any resistance on that front either. More likely we get resistance from smell issues and that kind of stuff.
Okay. Okay. Okay, great. Let's see what else we have coming in here. This questioner from Mora, Minnesota wants to know if there's any guidance that describes recommended models or the use of models in predicting acid mine drainage.
The Acid Drainage Technology Initiative is drafting a book on the use of models and another book on prediction.
Okay.
And one of the chapters of the GARD guide that I wasn't able to show you had to do with prediction. I would suggest you going to any of those. As far as models themselves, it's more of prediction techniques, and there are ASTM standards and processes for modeling what might be coming out of a waste pile, for example.
Okay, great. Thanks. We have a question from Lakewood, Colorado, and this person is asking what the current level of acceptance is for the treatment and perpetuity approach for both new and legacy sites. Anyone want to address that? It's kind of a big question, I guess.
It's, Ron, that's a very difficult question to answer. As far as acceptance of treatment in perpetuity, it's difficult for mining companies in that they have to somehow bond for that treatment in perpetuity. It's difficult for agencies because how do you actually do the calculations? Because net present value doesn't seem to work for things that may be worth more in the future rather than less. And as far as the public is really mixed on treatment and perpetuity in my experience.
Okay.
Well, you know, really, it's interesting. Carol, you showed a slide about back in Roman times, I'm not sure which country that was, the photo was taken in, where they're very evident, where there's, mine-influenced water, acid mine drainage, if you will, in that context. But I think that when you consider the application of passive treatment technologies, in the form of constructed wetlands and so forth, I'm not sure in perpetuity is a tricky concept so far as forever.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that these passive systems are designed for long-term passive treatment. It's more of a matter of monitoring. As long as we have the resources to do monitoring and to track, see the progression, evolution, or success of treatment, that's what's going to be the limiting factor, really.
Right. Okay.
So I don't know. In perpetuity I'm not sure where that terminology actually comes from with respect to a remedial goal.
Right. Okay. Let's see what else we have coming in here. We have a question from Denver, Colorado. The person states that their organization is considering options to improve upon their total maximum daily load development process to include implementation planning and remediation planning for abandoned mine lands. And what they want to know is if anyone has any suggestions for resources on this topic.
TMDLs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the work that the USGS has done in quantifying different loads from both surface inputs and groundwater inputs has really been useful, especially when they've done it before and after, so you actually get an effectiveness of different remediation technologies. So that's where I go.
Okay, great. Getting back to the Roman mine, I don't know if you guys are seeing this question, came in from Charleston, West Virginia. The person wants to know, with all the advancements in technology and research, do you think that acid mine drainage can be completely prevented, or do you think this will always be a problem, for example, the photo of the Roman mine? And I think we... Anyone want to address that?
This is Carol again. In one of my experiences in inspecting mining properties, the mine manager said, you know, the best thing we can do is mimic Mother Nature. I think the only way we're going to deal with some of these issues long term is not only look to what Mother Nature or the biological community can do to help us, not just in the treatment, but actually in the processing of the ore to begin with.
Right.
To minimize mining-influenced water. I'd like to hear what other people have to say on that. Anyone from the audience?
Anyone on the phone have any thoughts on this?
Well, I like the idea of mimicking nature, but I think nature doesn't get the metals out quite as quickly as people want to get them out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this actually goes along with the previous question so far as TMDLs, and you're looking at, overall watershed, eco types of considerations tend to be more natural processing and, again, assessment and monitoring. But we do have folks that are involved in this area, and, you know, like the Great Salt Lake Basin, alternative future technologies that I think embrace this kind of a concept, you know, of using natural, ecological, and perspective mechanisms and approaches to, you know, to dealing with this. I think the one what came to mind to me with respect to TMDLs, Michelle, was the slide that you showed about the Kluwen Eco Tools,
mm-hmm.
and something that I took note of, and I'm going to pass along to folks that are Joe Schubauer-Berrigan, the branch chief of the Ecological Management Support Branch, and
okay.
So you know this is a whole discipline in an area. I'm sure they're not, you know, exclusive, you know, to mining applications. Of a program that is pretty robust and growing and expanding, at least here in ORD.
Right. Okay.
And
great.
That's Dr. Joe Schubauer-Berrigan. He's the branch chief there. That I can,
okay.
If anybody's interested, I can get you in touch with him and give you
great.
His contact information.
Great, and that kind of leads into this next question we got actually from the United Kingdom. They want to know if there's any studies relating to the bioavailability of metals from mine waste and mine water to humans, fauna, flora, associated with any case studies. And I know there's an incredible amount of research that's being done by Kirk Shekel with Doug's office there in Cincinnati, Ohio. And then there's also Dr. Rufus Cheney, who the Superfund program works closely with in studying the revegetation of these metal-contaminated mine sites and looking at the uptake into plants and the eventual pathway to humans. So there is quite a bit of information on that. And if this questioner wants to know anything more specific, you can get in touch with me. This is Michelle Mahoney speaking. And I can certainly try to get you information that might be more specific to what you're trying to find out about. I don't know if anyone else on the phone has anything else to say about that topic of bioavailability.
Michelle, this is Sherry. In our ITRC guidance, one of the technologies that we have an overview for is reducing bioavailability. So
okay.
There's some references and some case studies in there.
Yeah, okay. Kurt Shekels, you know, does a lot of work with lead phosphate systems and treatment, and which, again, alludes to bioavailability considerations and work with a slag pile in the region 3 containing a lot of lead that we took samples that we did some treatability study work at our Center Hill Laboratory here in Cincinnati, Ohio, under the tutelage of Kirk Shekel and Todd Luxton, and they do quite a bit of work in that area, dealing with bioavailability, that is.
Yeah, some of the bioavailability studies that were done on the Leadville Mine Superfund site, and so the information from the Office of Research and Development that Doug Grossi was discussing would include those. Also, the USGS has been doing quite a bit with bioavailability. Kathy Smith and Bryant Kimball, I believe, both have done some bioavailability work.
Okay, great. Here's an interesting question from someone in the Forest Service in Butte, Montana. They want to know what EPA's thoughts are concerning circular liability associated with reprocessing mine waste by taking it to an active milling facility. They continue to state that if the waste are taken to an off-site facility for milling, it seems to open a can of worms in terms of becoming a TRP when that facility closes. Does anyone have any experience with that or any comments?
Maybe that will be addressed by the beneficial reuse guidance that's in the wing.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. I guess I can forward this question to Shahid to follow up with this person from the Forest Service. There's a couple questions that come in that I thought maybe I would forward to Shahid. And I told him I was going to do that, too. I think at this point maybe I'll let anyone who's on the phone that maybe wants to ask any questions or make any statements. Why don't we give you guys some time to speak up? You can take your phone off mute. If you use the keypad, if you hit #6, it'll unmute your phone.
I have a question about field characterization. You know, they have all these tests about AMD or ARD materials, and I'm wondering if there are any developing field measurements so that, for example, if you have a pile that has a mixture of, you know, high acid-generating potential materials and low acid-generating materials, you could somehow make field sorting decisions.
This is Carol again. It's called the triad approach, which is a QA mechanism that EPA has available. And maybe I can get to Michelle and send to you all references for it, but it's a field sorting sampling technique to be able to differentiate in the field. It's actually very, very useful.
Even for ARD, I've heard of triad, and I thought it was just mostly like you can get the results and say, Is there anything specific to that?
Well, it's specific to the amount of metals that are available, which quite often leads to what kind of mining-influenced water you're going to generate from that material. And another metal-specific, not ARD-specific method, is the use of a handheld XRF. Unit is very useful in screening in the field. Andy Robertson from Canada came up with a field paste test for acid generation. That basically was looking at the salts that are formed on the surface of a waste rock pile, for example, and what ones would dissolve very readily. So it didn't get into the long-term acid generation potential. Those are a few off the top. But a lot of these sites will help you find a lot more information on those subjects.
Okay, thank you.
Great. Does anyone else on the phone have any questions or comments? No?
If there's no other questions, I still have more questions.
sure, go ahead.
Well, I'm just wondering if there's anybody, like a name of somebody who, so I noticed that Midnight Mine was mentioned in one of the lists of places that are being worked on by, I think, IDRC or the ORD people. And I'm just wondering, are there other resources for specifically related to uranium mines? Resources or experts that I could consult with, or pending guidance, anything like that?
Right. I think it's Stuart Walker, who is in the EPA Superfund program. He's our expert on uranium mines, at least at the headquarters level.
Yeah, and I've actually worked with him too. And yet, anybody in the research realm, any special research interests?
Do you know of anybody in ORD, Doug, that working on uranium mines?
You know, I think that would be a question to ask Dave Reisman.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I think he's in Canada this weekend.
Okay. Why don't you
around? I could fire a question to him about
question?
That.
The person asked me a question. Can you send an email to me, Michelle Mahoney, and I will follow up to see if there's some who else is, that we might be able to connect you with?
You're asking me to send you an email? I can do that.
Yeah, that would be great.
And here in Region 8, we have a number of uranium mines being proposed, and some of them are uranium in situ. Our regional expert is Angelique Diaz. But she's more related to the air impacts rather than to the water impacts. But give her a call.
Great. Thank you very much.
Sure. No problem. Do you have anyone else on the telephone that might have a question or comment?
Yeah, I'll follow up with John McKernan and Dave Reisman about the uranium mines.
Okay, great.
No, I'll let you know, Michelle.
Okay, great. And then we'll follow up with her. We did have someone come in online from San Diego, California, that wanted us all to know that there's an industry responsibility group named the International Council on Mining and Metals, and just thought that folks might be interested in knowing about that group. So I thought I'd mention that.
Hmm.
Not seeing... And, well, there's one other question. Is anyone aware if there's any models being developed in relation to inhalation exposures, and particularly related to reuse of an area that might be in desert lands, where there might be a large inhalation exposures? Does anyone know if there's any models being developed for that kind of exposure? I personally am not available. I'm not in the know of anything being developed, and I sit on the technology review work groups for both bioavailability and lead, and they're mostly talking about, bioavailability and uptake of metals, particularly lead, from the whole gardening type of reuse, and they're also looking at the inhalation aspect of that, but I'm not familiar with any models being developed specifically for this large inhalation in desert lands. Okay. Well, if no one else has any more questions or comments, there's a couple things that came in that I'm going to follow up with the Shahid, I think that he can answer for us. I just want to thank all of our presenters today. I think this was a great kickoff webinar for this series that we're going to be having with mining. I think we'll be doing a webinar we're going to try for every 4 months and try to do them in some sort of tract. Like I said, the next one we're looking at it being on mine-influenced water treatment. We're also looking at maybe some a webinar on reuse, and just keep moving along every 4 months with a different topic area. So if anyone has any ideas for topics or or even presenters, we would love to hear about it. So I want to thank again all of our presenters. I really enjoyed the discussion. I think this is just a really lively webinar, and I look forward to the ones that we're going to be having in the future. So thank you, everyone, for your attention. I hope you all have a great rest of your day.